And welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast, a victory Monday, if you will. The Packers hammering the Texans in Houston 35-20. We'll jump into that along with the rest of the day in the NFC North. Huge game last night in Arizona. The World Series could end tomorrow night with the Dodgers win. And my old morning show partner, Mike Wickett, joins the show coming up in just a few minutes. All I can say is if you like the old show, I'm guessing you're probably going to like today's guest because the time constraints and handcuffs of a regular radio show, they're off. There are no breaks to get to. We're just going to have some fun and maybe get some football talk in as well. As always, you are more than welcome, encouraged, as a matter of fact, to interact with the show 24/7. You can find us at Doug Russell Pod on both Instagram and Twitter. You can search for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook or email us at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. All right, let's jump right into it. Sunday at NRG Stadium, the Packers took it to the Texans again, 35-20 the final score. Green Bay 5-1, Houston now 1-6 on the season. So no Aaron Jones in this game, so the rush game fell to Jamal Williams, 19 carries for 77 yards. Rookie A.J. Dillon did get 5 carries in for only 11 yards as he feels his way through his rookie season. Aaron Rodgers, 23 of 34, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 132.4. So Devontae Adams, though, was the big story in this one. Aaron Rodgers had 283 passing yards. 196 of them went to Devontae Adams on 13 receptions. As a matter of fact, he's the only wide receiver that caught a ball besides Malik Taylor, who caught 2 passes. Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Darius Shepard, they were targeted 4 and 1 times, respectively, and didn't catch any of those passes. I don't know what the future holds for MVS. I don't think that it's going to necessarily be in Green Bay. He broke out his rookie season, a lot of flashes of brilliance, but really hasn't shown consistency since. Darius Shepard, I'm not sure, just got off the practice squad a few weeks ago, and he hasn't earned Aaron Rodgers' trust quite yet. But Malik Taylor, 2 catches, including his first NFL touchdown. He was only targeted twice as well, so that bodes well, I think, for him. Jay Sternberger, he caught his first NFL touchdown as well. And again, Jamal Williams out of the backfield catching 4 balls. Robert Tonyan, not Tonyan, but Tonyan, as we found out this week, 2 catches. But again, Devontae Adams, 13 receptions, targeted 16 times, 2 touchdowns, 196 yards. At the end of the day, though, Matt LaFleur's team improves to 5-1 with a win.
It's always awesome to bounce back after, you know, the game that we had the previous week. I'm really proud of our guys' effort, just how they brought it each and every day. We had a lot of guys out in this game, and we had a lot of guys step up. And so that's always awesome to see guys getting opportunities and maximizing those opportunities.
Now, every week this season, in each Packers win, the Tampa Bay game notwithstanding, it had been someone new stepping up, but now we have our first repeat top performer. Again, week one star, Devontae Adams. Again, 13 receptions.
It was more the coverages that we were seeing and then the plays that Matt was dialing up. You know, he was in position for a number of those opportunities. But it was really the catch down the left sideline on third down and got us going, him and I together. Just the beautiful late hands by him.
Of course, Aaron Rodgers has had a lot of great receivers to throw to over the years. Donald Driver, James Jones, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, who of course now plays for the Texans. We saw him on Sunday. Devontae's as good as any of them.
Just such a talented player. He gives you, you know, such a wide margin when you're throwing the ball to him. So steady. And, you know, his communication is between him and I has been, you know, really, really good. So when he's in the game, obviously we're tough.
At times, though, to the coach, it looked a little bit like sandlot ball. It was fun.
I can think of one in the second half where we had a third down call where that wasn't necessarily the route called. And he looked over and saw Devontae one-on-one and gave him a go route. And same with the long touchdown pass. He was supposed to run a corner route, and Aaron took advantage of the look and checked the play. We're so fortunate to have a quarterback that's capable of seeing those mismatches and then taking advantage of them.
A week ago, after the Packers lost to the Buccaneers, the knock on Green Bay was that they had a bad week of practice. Not the case for Adams leading up to their Texans two-step.
That's when it's kind of a recipe for success for us as an offense and, you know, just Aaron and I's connection. So that was something that we aimed to do, come out and kind of hit on all cylinders early and, you know, get me going so that I can be able to produce for this offense. And great plan this week. Felt good about everything all week, you know, coming in Monday, getting some of that stuff, some of the plays running. And by the time it got to Friday, I had a pretty good feeling about how this game was going to go.
As I mentioned earlier, on the ground with Aaron Jones out, Jamal Williams got the nod for the coach to the tune of 19 carries for 77 yards.
Jamal is a starter in our mind, and we feel like we have two of them. And Jamal does so much, not only obviously as a runner, but in the passing game, whether it's going out of the backfield, catching balls, and in protection. He's always consistent, and we know we can always count on him.
Jamal is such an important part of our team in so many facets, not just, you know, the physical on the field stuff you see where he's extremely talented. You know, I just thought the first catch and run that kind of got us going early was just such a smooth play by him. You know, to hands catch it like nothing, turn up the field. Maybe something he might not have done as smooth last year. He obviously brings so much outside of the physical, the energy, the swag, the dancing moves that we all can try and copy or just marvel at. But he's an important, important part of what we're doing. And with Jonesy, you know, being able to go today and to have him step up and play the way he played was not surprising, but I don't want to belittle it at all. It's a really important part of what happened today was him in there.
One final note from Sunday's game, the post-game news conference from University of Wisconsin standout and the pride of Pewaukee, three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year, J.J. Watt. This is the news conference in its entirety. Now, it runs about 2.5 minutes, a little bit more than 2.5 minutes, so you get a pretty good feeling of what's going through his mind right now as he suffers through yet another fruitless season with a team and a franchise that's going absolutely nowhere.
J.J., what's it like chasing Aaron Rodgers and getting close to him and then find out he's already completed a great pass down the field?
What do you think that's like? Not great.
Mark Berman.
J.J., we've kind of asked you these questions several times this year, but now you're going into the bye week at 1-6. What are your feelings about this team going forward?
Get better.
Aaron Wilson.
JJ, as a leader, as a veteran on the team, what do you tell your teammates the way the state of the season, the state of the team right now, as far as holding it together, keeping it together?
Show up to work and do your job.
Brandon Scott.
Hey, JJ, how would you assess your level of confidence in this defense and in this team right now, considering where everything is?
I mean, we're 1-6. You are what your record says you are.
And John, also,
go ahead, Brandon.
I understand that you don't coach or play DB, but could you speak to how the injury to Bradley Roby just kind of threw things off for you guys in terms of whatever your game plan was today?
No. I know nothing about that.
John?
Can you talk about the way Rodgers played today and compare it to the ways you'd seen him play earlier and when you guys played against him?
He played very well today.
What did he do that made him play well?
Threw the ball to the receivers and they caught.
Mark Berman?
JJ, y'all came close last week in the second half. Your defense had several stops in a row, so there was a chance something could happen if your offense could have done something. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel for this team going forward?
Just got to go to work. Get better.
Aaron Wilson.
JJ, how would you characterize your emotions at this point? Just kind of, I would say it's frustrating. It's tough. You're not accustomed to losing around here, and you won a lot of football games over the years. What's this like for you personally?
Yeah, frustrated. I'm angry. I mean, sucks. I don't know. Like, it's, yeah. I don't know what else I'm supposed to feel.
Thanks, JJ.
Mm-hmm.
So that was J.J. Watt after yesterday's game. There have been some rumors that have been flying around about the trading deadline, which is coming up on November 3rd, which is rapidly approaching. There has been a thought, and I think it's been pushed mostly by the Athletics' Matt Schneidman, that it might be the best fit for J.J. Watt, and it might be what's best long-term for the Houston Texans if J.J. comes to Green Bay and plays defensive end for the Packers. Now, if you think about the homecoming, if you think about all of the storylines that were even talked about on the television broadcast during yesterday's game by Kenny Albert, he was talking about how J.J. Watt, when he was a kid, used to listen to Wayne Larrivee on the Packers radio network as he was going to hockey games, he and his dad and his brothers used to go up to Green Bay during training camp and things like that. It would be such a natural fit. And you know, I always go back to the draft when the Packers could have selected T.J. Watt. Instead, they traded out of the first round and wound up getting, instead of T.J. Watt, who might be the NFL's defensive player of the year this season, they instead traded out. They got Kevin King, who's still with the team, and then Vince Beagle, who's been bouncing around the NFL for the last several years, ever since he got drafted. But the Packers could have had T.J. Watt. Now they could potentially have J.J. Watt. A rejuvenated J.J. Watt coming back to his home state, playing for a team that's a contender, playing for a franchise that's at least rowing in the right direction. He's 31 years old, as we talked about on Friday's show with Sean Pendergast from KILT Radio in Houston. You know, he doesn't have anything left to prove with the Texans, and I don't think this is a franchise that's really going to go anywhere anytime soon, despite the fact that they've got a really, really good, young, exciting quarterback in Deshaun Watson. So if you're the Texans, does it make sense to trade J.J. Watt? And if you're the Packers, does it make sense to bring him in? I think it does. Yes, it would make everybody in Green Bay feel great, and I think it would be a great homecoming story for J.J. I still think he's got, if he's rejuvenated, I still think that he's got three or four really solid years left in that three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year body. Yes, he's been nicked up. Yes, he's had some terrible injuries that have ended three of his seasons prematurely. But could you think of a better PR move for the Packers? Not that they need great PR right now, but could you think of a better PR move and, you know, watching those number 99 jerseys flying off the shelves at the Packer Pro Shop? I think it'd be a good move for all concerned. And it would be, I think, a lot of fun for Packers fans as well. All right, of course, the Packers do come home to host the Vikings next week, Sunday. Minnesota, they were on their bye week this week. Elsewhere around the NFC North.
From the Falcon, 11-yard line, down by six, final play of the game. Stafford empty out of the gun. He's got it back. Looks, pumps one, steps up, looks, throws, end zone.
Yes!
Carr! Touchdown, yes! Detroit Lions! T.J. Hockenson!
Yes!
They did it! They've tied it! They're an extra point away from winning this game! Oh, baby, how big is that?
The call on WJR Radio in Detroit as T.J. Hockenson catches the 11-yard touchdown pass from Matthew Stafford. The Lions tie the game at 22-22. As you heard, all the Lions needed was the PAT, but there was an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty that pushed the extra point to what would amount to be a 48-yard attempt. Matt Prater lined it up.
Ulbach to snap. There it is. Fox the hole. Kick away. It is up. It is good. It is good. We got another flag down. What is it? We got a flag down. What is it? Is this game over or not?
Illegal formation. Defense.
That's it. This is over. Pack it up, boys, and come home.
With a 23-22 win, the Lions now 3-3 on the season. The Falcons fall to a miserable 1-6. As for T.J. Hockenson, he's at least caught one touchdown in three straight games for Detroit. Also from the NFC North, the Bears take on the Rams tonight in Los Angeles. Chicago coach Matt Nagy on what his quarterback Nick Foles has to do to get Chicago rolling.
It's me as a play caller, him as a quarterback, us as an offense. Being able to get off to a fast start and keep that fast start. Number one, if you're getting a fast start, you're usually moving the chains and you're keeping the defense on the field a little bit, or our defense off the field for a rest. But then if you get the lead and score points, now the team becomes a little bit more one-dimensional, and now they can pin their ears back, and that's where you become more opportunistic.
Chicago comes in tied with Green Bay at 5-1 on the season. That begs the question for Packers fans, are the Bears for real? I think they are, but we've also been thinking that they are for a while now, along with another team that I'll get to here in a second that had an amazing game last night. But back to Chicago. I know that the rivalry, look, I lived in Chicago. Obviously, I've lived most of my life in Wisconsin. I know the Packers-Bears rivalry inside and out. I think that Bears fans hate the Packers more than Packers fans hate the Bears, but it doesn't matter. The bottom line is this. The rivalry is better. The Packers-Bears rivalry is better when both teams are good. It was pretty miserable for Wisconsinites, and I was growing up in the 1980s. It was the 1980s was miserable being a Packers fan because every time the Bears came in, you had a pretty good idea that Chicago was going to come away with that victory. It was the opposite. The shoe was on the other foot starting in the 1990s with the Brett Favre era. At one point, Brett Favre was like 20-4 against Chicago, and Aaron Rodgers has had similar success. The Packers, of course, won the 2010 season. It was in January of 2011, but the 2010 season NFC Championship game, which gave them huge bragging rights, perhaps permanent bragging rights. And then, of course, what happened a couple of years later when Randall Cobb lost Chris Conte on the last play of the game, when John Kuhn shipped future Packer Julius Peppers and Aaron Rodgers was just able to get that pass off. That gave the Packers the division. It gave the Packers a playoff berth, and it kicked the Bears right out of the postseason. That gave Green Bay enormous bragging rights, but it's so much better when there's something on the line between these two teams. So I hope that the Bears continue to have success. Obviously, I hope the Packers continue to have success, because when they meet later in the season, or maybe even in the playoffs, oh man, that makes it so, so much better. All right, so we've been asking the question about whether or not the Bears are for real. We've also been asking the question about whether or not the Arizona Cardinals are real for a long time, too. The answer has mostly been no, despite the fact that they've had some pretty good players over the last several years. But with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, they might just finally be for real. On Sunday Night Football, Arizona mounted a furious rally against what many consider to be the best team in the NFC, the, at going into the game at least, 5-0 Seahawks.
Murray calling out the play. Snap to Murray. Short set. Fires right. Caught by Kirk at the two. Dives. He's in. Touchdown. Christian Kirk with his second touchdown, and it leaves 2:28 on the clock.
The call by Dave Pasch and Ron Wolfley on Arizona Sports Station 98.7 FM. Kyler Murray finding Christian Kirk for an 8-yard touchdown pass. So on to overtime they go. Arizona, though, settled for a 41-yard field goal attempt by Zane Gonzalez. It was still just 2nd and 15. That would have ended it, though, in overtime. But Gonzalez missed it inadvertently after his own coach kind of iced him by calling a timeout as the play clock was rolling down. Seattle, though, gets the ball back after Kirk missed it. Russell Wilson throws the last of his three interceptions on the night. The Cardinals then drove it into field goal range again.
48-yard attempt for Zane Gonzalez, looking to win the game and get some redemption here in overtime. 20 seconds to go. Snap. Ball is down. Kick from Gonzalez is up. It looks good. It is good! The Cardinals win it! An incredible finish at State Farm Stadium. The Cardinals take down Seattle. 37-34. Redemption for Zane Gonzalez.
Arizona improves to 5-2 on the season. Seattle falls to 5-1. Keep an eye on both of those two teams. The Packers could meet them in the postseason. But in this game, with 2.5 minutes left, Seattle led by 10. A touchdown cut the deficit to 3. Seattle had to punt after a series. That gave Arizona just 52 seconds and 80 yards. But Kyler Murray drove his team to the 26. Gonzalez hit a 44-yarder just to get to overtime. Kyler Murray, one of the most exciting young players right now in the NFL. 34 of 48, 360 yards, 3 touchdowns, did throw 1 interception, a quarterback rating of 104.5 on the evening. That trade with the Packers' opponent yesterday, the Houston Texans, that trade for DeAndre Hopkins, that could be the linchpin in getting Arizona, I wouldn't say over the top, because I think that they're one of the teams, along with Seattle, along with maybe Green Bay, along with Chicago, that are true contenders in the NFC. Don't sleep on San Francisco. The Packers will see them in a couple of weeks as well. That NFC West is just absolutely stacked right now. But DeAndre Hopkins, the NFL's leading receiver right now. Last night, 10 receptions for 103 yards and a touchdown. And the old man, Larry Fitzgerald, 8 catches for 62 yards. Probably his last season in Arizona, but also last night, his final catch gave Larry Fitzgerald at State Farm Stadium more receptions than any other NFL player in a single stadium. He's played his entire career at what used to be University of Phoenix Stadium, now at State Farm Stadium, but Larry Fitzgerald has caught more balls in that stadium than any other receiver in NFL history in any other single stadium. There's your fun fact for the day. Incredible stuff. Likewise, the World Series has been incredible as well.
1-2 to Peterson. Now the pitch, and there's a fly ball to center field. That's well hit way back, and gone, a home run. Jock Peterson, his second home run of the postseason, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead. 3-2, a pitch to Muncy. And there's a fly ball to right. Max Muncy has left the yard in a very big way. And the Dodgers take a 4-2 lead.
Charlie Steiner on the call on KLAC Radio in Los Angeles. Max Muncy with that solo home run to right that I don't know if it's come down yet. The Dodgers take it 4-2 over the Rays. They lead the series 3-2. They are one game away from winning their first World Series since 1988. Game 6 is Tuesday night. But our top story. If you know me, chances are you know my guest today on the podcast. I did mornings with this guy for almost 5 years, a partnership that ended almost a decade ago, but I still get messages about it pretty regularly. He's on a temporary radio sabbatical, I guess you could call it right now, as he and his wife Lee are raising their young family, but he got into the podcasting world before I did. He is my old morning partner from 1250 WSSP. We welcome in Mike Wickett to the podcast. Mike, thanks for joining me today.
Doug, when you say it like that, it makes me actually for the first time begin to feel really, really radio old. Like, I've felt old all the time. Ever since, like, you hit 35 and up, you start going. But when you say it was a decade ago and I start thinking and doing the math, I'm like, God bless. If I could go back and talk to 2008 Doug and Mike, man, they wouldn't believe what 2020 Mike Wickett was doing.
Yeah, all right. So let's catch people in that same vein then. Let's catch people up a little bit because we did that show from 2007. And I say this when I say that it seemed like it was longer than that. I mean that in a good way. I know that this doesn't always come off when you say, oh, it seemed like forever. But I mean that in a good way.
It was a 4-year run. And it felt like 4 decades.
Right, right, right. But the amount of messages that I still, I don't know if you are get the same amount of messages that I do about it, or when I just encounter people, man, I used to listen to you and Mike on 1250 every morning. I mean, this was about four and a half years that we did that show from early 2007 to June of 2011. So that's a little bit more than 4 years, about 4.5 years. I still get messages about it all the time. And I know you were there longer than I was, but that's when people hear my name, that's what they immediately associate me with most, more than anything else.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I get my fair share of, man, I listen to you and Doug, and then, you know, I listen to you and Chuck and all that. I listen to all the old school guys on The Fan. I mean, there's been a little turnover at that radio station, but a lot of it still remains the same. It seems like two lifetimes ago that you and I were on the air together, and it seems even longer than that I was on the phone with our former boss, Ryan McGuire, and I remember the end of 2006, he left Ann Arbor to come to Milwaukee, and then there was a job opening to be your producer, and he called me for it. And I said, no, I think if I went from mornings in small market Ann Arbor to producing mornings, it would be a horizontal move. I'm not going to take it. Then I saw in the trades you were looking for a co-host, Doug. And that's right. When I said, I need to get back on the phone with Ryan, and we need to try to work this out. And do you remember, it was New Year's Eve, okay, that I drove to Milwaukee with my then girlfriend at the time. I left her at the mall, and then I drove. I left her at Bayshore Mall, and then I drove, and John Audius and I,
right,
both interviewed with you or fake showed with you, and we got done, and I then got in the car, and the girlfriend and I drove back to Detroit that
couldn't
night.
Couldn't spend the night? I mean, no. You could have at least gotten a hotel room or something.
I think we did the night before.
Okay.
I think Entercom had put us up in the night before, but we drove back that night, and it was like, all right, let's see if it works. And then, you know, you get the phone call, and you make the big life change to come to a city you've never been to before in Milwaukee. And, you know, I will tell you a lot. I learned so much from doing that show with you. First of all, I learned more about baseball doing that show with you, because I came from Ann Arbor, and it was, sure, Michigan football, and it was Michigan basketball, and yeah, we touched on the Lions, but it was all U of M stuff. But I learned more about baseball specifically in my years working with you because of what a damn diehard baseball nerd you are. But just to learn about the Brewers and the history of the Brewers and what the Brewers and their terrible history record-wise, what they mean to the city of Milwaukee and the entire state. So the thing I took most of it was, yeah, we had a lot of fun and we had a lot of cool interviews and whatnot, but I would not have had the continued success after you were asked to not come in the building anymore, with, which is a kind way to put that.
I wasn't asked, Mike. I'll put it that way.
Please don't come back, sir. But without doing, you know, Brewers baseball with you, and I got there in January of 07, so right. We had a whole season before Ryan Braun was even a thing. Like, that's how long ago it was. Like, that's what I took away from working with you the most, was an enhanced baseball knowledge, because you beat it into me every day.
Well, I mean, and the thing about Milwaukee sports is you kind of have to.
Yes.
Because in the summertime, the Packers are out there. There's still, you know, there's mini camps, there's OTAs, there's things like that, and they exist. But you remember at the time, the Bucks were the worst thing you can be, not only in the NBA, but the worst thing that you can be in sports is irrelevant. And that's what the Bucks were. They were just irrelevant. Nobody cared. And the Brewers were a good, young, and up-and-coming team. And like you mentioned, Ryan Braun was still in the minor leagues that first month and a half that the Brewers season had started. And I remember that you and I would have Doug Melvin on every once in a while. And it's like, so when's Ryan Braun coming up? And I remember there are a number of things that stick out to me about it. But I remember the morning after Braun was first called up and the Brewers were in San Diego. I remember having Doug Melvin on with you and me that morning, and just wanted to know something about Ryan. Just tell us a little bit about something. And the phraseology that Doug Melvin used was, well, he's a very confident young man.
Yeah. And Ryan Braun is definitely confident. I think in his maturing years, meaning as he turned 30 and whatnot, that cockiness seemed to die off, and he realized he wasn't the superstar that he was. I remember, is Michael Hunt still around in Milwaukee?
No, he's not. He retired from the Journal Sentinel.
Okay.
And he's living somewhere in Europe. I should know this.
Is he living in Europe? That's amazing.
Yes. He is Switzerland or Sweden or somewhere there. I should, maybe Denmark.
It doesn't really matter.
It's one of the Nordic countries. I should know. I don't know. I'll fact check this later. But yes, he's living in Europe right now.
I remember when and Michael wasn't the most fun guy to be around. I mean, when the rare times Michael would come on, he was a grump, and he's just not the most fun dude ever. But I remember his column or a quote from him that said, well, you might as well put Braun's name up. I mean, he was serious. He said, now that Braun's called up, you might as well put his name up and retire it, because he expected Braun to be that good. And you can argue that Braun is one of the top three, four Brewers of all time. I mean, I know what happened with Dino Lorenzi and all of that, but you know that it feels like that was my introduction to Brewers baseball was, and I remember you quoting it, make September relevant.
Yep.
And I didn't realize that you had not really had relevant, you know, Septembers in Milwaukee. And then it was the Ryan Braun era with Prince Fielder and Corey and Ricky and Giovanni and that era of Brewers baseball. I'm like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. These guys compete for the playoffs all the time.
Right, right, right. But they didn't. It was 26 years since. I mean,
was it 26? I had never heard that before. I don't.
You're right. The way I put it is, okay, now that it looks like Ryan Braun's career with the Brewers may finally be over, especially now that it doesn't look like the National League is bringing back the designated hitter for 2021 and beyond. But in Ryan Braun's lifetime, from the time that he was born until 2008, the Brewers had not gotten to the playoffs ever.
Yeah.
Since he's gotten to Milwaukee, they've been there six times now. So I think
now
it is.
Yeah. Whatever.
It's
are these expanded playoffs going to be around?
Five times, not six. I misspoke. But no, it's not. And they should. I don't think they should be. I mean, 16 teams was ridiculous. You had teams like, well, the Brewers had a losing record to get into the playoffs. The Astros almost made it to the World Series with a losing record this year. So it's just because I think of the 60-game COVID weirdness, it was just, you know, they needed to do something to make, I think, the World Series a little bit more relevant. And you know, you've got the two number one seeds going at it in the World Series right now, which has turned out to be pretty compelling between the Dodgers and the Rays.
I think I don't want to see 16 come in, and I think that's ridiculous, but I think it was a really, really smart move, because baseball, I don't know if you've heard, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Doug.
Once or twice.
because you teams aren't who they are after 30 games or 40 games or 60 games. I mean, it's always like you get to Memorial Day and then you can kind of look at the standings and figure that's where most of it's going to be by the time we get to September. I mean, the Nationals, as you know, didn't win. They would not have been in the playoffs, you know, after 60 games in 2019, and they went on to win the World Series. So I kind of liked it from that standpoint, is get more teams in, give more teams a chance to win, and darn it, we got a good World Series right now.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the final thing that I'll say about the old show, I mean, we did, it was kind of couched as a reunion show a few weeks ago. It was on the Bill Michaels Radio Network. It was a Packers-centric show. At times, it kind of felt like Bill was there, but he wasn't there, which...
No, I'm glad Bill... I was pretty thrilled that you and I had Bill on our show. It was so cool of Bill Michaels to join us on the Doug and Mike show, the 2020 reboot.
Right. I'm eternally grateful for Bill and Joe Zanzola, his producer, for reaching out to us. That was fun. It was a lot of fun. I don't know if you would realize this, but apparently, as the feedback has gotten back to me a little bit, it started a lot of rumors that we were getting the band back together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think what people was the feedback I got from it was they liked it that our mics were still on. Because I was streaming it over Facebook and Twitter and YouTube.
I got
and
that
people
too,
were listening to you and I. They were like, I like the behind-the-scenes conversation. I have not been contacted by anyone to work with Doug.
Right.
I'm currently a free agent. Doug, I know you're a free agent. We're both free agents. But as of right now, no one has contacted me to join you anywhere other than you right now.
I can confirm that as well. I mean, you're
okay,
doing...
Okay.
Yes, it started some rumors around town, so we'll just dispel that right now. You're doing your family thing right now, and I know that that's not in the office. It did kind of make me feel good, though, that maybe we were onto something back in the day, though. That's all I'll say about that.
Oh, I mean, and to go back to your question like 12 minutes ago or whatever it was, I mean, people still remember that being, you know, because I don't know what 1250 was before you and I got there. I mean, it seemed to have Peter Brown tone, and I only know of Peter from stories, like having strippers in and it just having a different feel than when you and I got there. And I didn't know anything about Milwaukee sports, so I definitely played second fiddle and watched you and Sparky and Gary and Cliff. And it felt like when we got together and the rest of the shows kind of moved themselves around, it felt like the station had a more professional sound to it than what was the previous regime. If that makes sense.
I think they were trying to figure some things out when the station first launched, because you remember that before WSSP launched, there was only one station, WAUK, which at the time, I'd have to go back and figure out the timeline of when Good Karma made it a daytime nighttime, but it was only during the day, and then the station went dark, and then they got a nighttime signal as well, so it was on
like
one
1510.
Yeah,
something
I forgot
like that.
It was 1510 during the day, and
it was 540, or was that not even?
No, 540 didn't exist yet. 540 was something.
I didn't know if there was another. It was like 540, and then 15. I know 1510 was one of them,
right?
But I can't remember if that was day or night. I don't know.
I think that was the daytime, but I'm not 100% sure. But so there wasn't. A 24/7 sports station. WTMJ did a sports show at night and did all the play-by-play, of course. But SSP was really the first 24/7, the same signal sports station in Milwaukee. And now there's three of them.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's and I know that the Fan just turned off their FM and their only AM. But I mean, at the time, I remember when I was in Kansas City up until last winter, I'm like, Do we really need three FM sports talk stations in market size 38 or whatever Milwaukee is right now? You know how many FM sports talk stations there are in Chicago?
Zero.
None. Yeah. None. None. There are none in Chicago. And at the time, there were three in Milwaukee. I'm like, something does not seem right about
Well,
that.
I can, you know, pile it on a little bit more. 540 ESPN still exists as an all ESPN. They do some high school football and basketball on 540 ESPN, but that's the national ESPN outlet in Milwaukee. So that's four. And then WOKY, the big 920, is all Fox Sports Radio as well. So there, if you count those, there are five stations that do sports in Milwaukee, and TMJ, who still does all the play-by-play. So that's nuts.
I mean, how many country stations are there? How many hip-hop stations are there? Is there a I know there's two big news talk stations. It feels like Milwaukee could probably use some other new, different kind of format, but I have no idea. I'm not a programmer.
Right. Yeah. So catch people up to date. You left Milwaukee to go to Kansas City when, and then you were doing political talk for a while in KC.
I started dating my wife, Lee, and she was the assistant program director and music director in Milwaukee for KISS FM. And a guy by the name of Tony Lorino, who used to work at The Mix in the same building, he was down in Kansas City programming a radio station. And then he got a job in Atlanta and recommended Lee for the job. And Lee and I had just moved in together. And when I say just moved in together, we had just gotten our dream Third Ward apartment, the one she always wanted, Doug. It was right across from the Summerfest grounds. We walked to Summerfest, the one Summerfest we lived there, because when I drove the moving truck back, the U-Haul back, Doug, I came in moving sweat, and I walk into the dream apartment she had to have in the Third Ward, and Kansas City was on the other end saying that they were hiring her that day. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So she got the job as the program director down there, and our boss, Tom Parker in Milwaukee, talked with the Entercom cluster where she was also working. Like, it was all Entercom. And their boss and my boss got on the phone and started talking, like, is there a way we can make this work? And this was before, like, COVID made this much more normal than it was back in 2015 when this happened.
Sure.
Can I use a studio in Kansas City and do the show in Milwaukee along with Chuck Freeman and Bart Winkler, who are on the other ends? Can that work? And they rigged a studio up, and it was mine. And I would go in at, 5:30 in the morning or whatever, in this little studio, Doug. I could touch all the walls at the same time. Like, it was lit. It was a broom closet. And I would do the show there. And the thing was, like, then if you weren't in Milwaukee or you weren't in a city, the thinking was that was bad. Whereas now, I don't think it matters anymore as long as you're familiar with the town. I mean, hell, Zabin does the show on the game, and I don't know if he's ever actually been to Wisconsin other than the one time,
Yeah.
So for 11 months, I lived a double life that only a few people knew about. My friends in Kansas City knew about it. My close friends in Milwaukee knew about it. Maybe more people knew than I actually think. But I would do the show in Milwaukee and be living my life in Kansas City, but you would never see me post pictures on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. We lied to people, basically. They flew me in for different events like the toy drive, or even once just to take stock photos at Miller Park. Like, sure. this was a covert operation.
First, like a slow release throughout the season. Yeah, take about 200 exactly. pictures, and then they always seem to be playing the Reds. I don't
Man,
know what that's all about.
They have the
I don't
same
know.
Seats every time. but then an opportunity came up to live my real life on a news talk station, KMBZ, big FM news talk station, doing the midday show. And I had actually filled in. I would go down the hall after I got off the air at 10 and do the show from 10 until 2. And I became friends with the woman. And lo and behold, the guy half of that show in 2016 got a gig in Seattle. Later fired by our old boss, Ryan McGuire.
You know, they say that radio is the same 100 people going after the same 99 jobs.
Right.
So, yeah.
It pretty much
it's
is.
It's all cyclical.
So I started doing the show, and it's a news talk station on a center. I mean, the market is very Republican. It's a very conservative area. Our AM signal carried Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, that kind of programming. And we were all local from morning until night. And it was kind of like when I started working with you and I started working with in Milwaukee. Like, I didn't know anything about Kansas City. I had a year to kind of learn the street names and where the pool was.
Right.
But I learned more about local Kansas and Missouri government and meeting local officials and talking to people in Kansas City, kind of the way I did with Milwaukee in those 3 years. And it was very, very different. Like, sports and... was it Tom Looney? Yeah, Tom Looney calls it the toy department of radio.
Yep.
Sports radio really is fun. I didn't dislike my time in Kansas City. It just was not as fun as doing sports talk because everything is so serious. Like when the Parkland shooting happened, we spent a lot of time talking about Parkland. You know, politics-wise, we learned after about a year, stop talking about D.C. politics because you just split the audience. I lean left. My co-host leaned left. We're in a conservative area. Those who want to hear about Trump and company, go to Rush Limbaugh, go to Hannity. You don't want to hear my opinion on Trump and vice versa. Like, if you don't want to hear about Trump, you don't want to hear me talking about Trump. The thing is, Doug, as soon as we stopped talking about Trump, our ratings skyrocketed. Our ratings went way up. We were like,
that surprises me.
13th, 11th, 10th. We went up. When I left, we were second with men in the ratings. We were second with women in the ratings. We were second in overall persons in the ratings because we stopped talking Trump.
So is that the biggest difference then between political radio and sports radio? Is that, I mean, look, I think sports, for the most part, from my experience, is local as well. I mean, we could talk, you know, about the World Series until we're blue in the face, but I don't know how many people who are listening to this really care about the Dodgers and the Rays right now.
That it's mostly that, you know, and I think the biggest difference, I mean, when you cover a big breaking story, it's kind of the same thing. Like if there is, you know, election night, you're hammering with political consultants. You want to get somebody on from both sides of the campaign. If you're, you know, covering the Missouri governor's race or whatever, you're going to have people on. Just like if there's a new hire, you're going to get, you know, somebody from, you know, the Brewers on, someone who covers the Brewers. You're going to get, okay, so where was Craig Counsell before this? Let's talk about what kind of manager he was in his last stop. Like, you're going to do kind of the same things, just the names change. The biggest difference in my time doing news talk radio versus sports talk radio is if you're on, Doug, and you're on TMJ and you're doing a post-game show or you're doing a talk show or whatever when you're at ESPN, everybody, for the most part, is rooting for the same team. You may not want to get there the same way. We're all rooting for the Packers, but some people think that the Packers waste a draft pick. Some people think that the Packers did a great job on the draft pick. But at the end of the day, everybody wants the Packers to win. What I learned is when I get on the air and we start talking politics, half the people want me to fail. Half because of, especially as divisive as we are right now. And I'm kind of glad I'm not doing that during Biden, Trump in this run, because half the people think that whatever you're saying is wrong and you're an idiot and you're, you know, this or that. And on both sides, everybody's rooting for the Packers to win. Everybody's on the same team. That's not the case when you do an opinionated talk show focused on everyday issues. When you dip into that political world, it's as nasty as it can be. And I've had death threats on our text line down there. I got called. My co-host is a female, and a text line has no names, just has phone numbers. And my partner, Jamie, got called every name in the book. And it's all by men because women aren't that mean to each other. But it got really nasty. And there were sometimes I would come home and Lee would say, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Just a rough show today. You know, we were talking about the Kavanaugh hearings, and it just was, you know, that kind of stuff. It just wears on you when half the people are calling you names, and you have to have a strong back to do it. Whereas baseball, you know, Brewers lose, Packers lose the NFC title game. You're sad, but your life goes on. You know, it's just a football game.
Do you think you'd ever do political radio again if the opportunity arose?
Yeah, probably. I'd like to not be hated. And maybe I need to move to Seattle or New York for that, but I'd like to not be hated. I mean, I've filled in a couple of times here in Des Moines on WHO, the huge 50,000-watt heritage station. It's been around since 1923. I think it's a couple of days older than TMJ. I think WLS might be older. WGN might be older in Chicago. But it covers the entire state. And I've filled in for a guy. I mean, the station carries Rush Limbaugh in the afternoon, so you know that it's got a very conservative base. And I came in and I tried to play very down the middle and not political at all the couple of times I filled in, and I got called socialist, I got called liberal idiot, and I was like, listen, the point of this conversation was, have you lost friends to politics because of, you know, whether they're a Trump supporter or a Biden supporter or whatever? have you lost friends and why? And tell me your story. And both sides had good stories, but I'm a liberal idiot for bringing it up.
So then how do you handle this election? I mean, I know you're not on the radio full time doing it like you were at KMBZ with Jamie, but how do you handle this election that has been so nasty? I think it's even nastier than what we saw 4 years ago between Trump and Clinton. And, you know, we're a week and a day out from the final day of voting.
I used to be a Facebook fighter, Doug. I used to be a Twitter Trump trasher. And I have realized a couple of things. One, there is no point. There really is no point, especially this deep in it. Even like 3 months ago, you're not going to change anyone's mind with any fact that you present to them on whatever, whether they're a Biden supporter and they don't believe that somebody said this, or they're a Trump supporter and you're like, well, he's actually lying here for the umpteenth time. You're not changing anybody's mind. Like, that to me is one of the biggest things about this, is we are so stuck in our ways as a country that you're never going to get the diehards to listen. And the diehards are the loudest ones. They're the ones that post the ridiculous, baseless, informationless memes and all that stuff. Like, it drives me nuts to see some of the stuff on Facebook. And there was one day when Lee walked in, my wife walked in to our bedroom where I have my little studio built, and I'm over here and I'm just typing away, Doug, and you can hear the keys going like I'm writing a novel. And she said, what are you doing? Are you writing a book? And I said, no, I'm responding to someone on Facebook. And you
Erica
feel like
said,
an idiot.
Hey, Erica said the same thing to me on occasion, right? As well. So I get it. And I've stopped. I've just gotten to the point where, all right, so I try. I've tried to stop as much as I can.
And you just, there's no point in arguing with people. And she has noticed that since I stopped working at KMBZ and have backed off a little, or when I did back off a little on Facebook and Twitter, I was in a better mood. And when I'm in a better mood, she is in a better mood. When I'm in a better mood, I'm more active with the children. We have three babies running around here. So I've really pulled back. I mean, I haven't gotten into a good Facebook fight in weeks, Doug, and I feel okay with it. Like,
I've got some family members I can direct you to if you ever have the
No,
itch.
No, I'm good. Okay. I am good on that. Okay. You know how, like, you have to work on your own soul before you can change things?
Right.
You have to work on you. Like, I need to fix me before I fix anything else in my world. So I've stopped, you know, I'll retweet a thing or two every few days, but there's just no point, you know? I hope this country gets better. It needs to be healed. And my mom is like, I watched 42 minutes of the first debate, and that was all I could handle. I didn't watch the third debate or the second debate, whatever. I watched pretty much all the Democratic convention. I dipped in once in a while on the Republican National Convention just to hear Trump Jr.'s girlfriend yell at me. It was, you know, there's I don't know if it really matters if you argue and fight with people. So I've tried to not do that.
All right. So you're also doing some podcasting right now as well. Originally, I said, no more than 15 minutes and we'll talk mostly about football. Well, that went right to shit.
Okay.
You do a couple of podcasts, including one right after the Packers game ends. How does that work? Because I saw you on Twitter right after the Packers beat up on the Texans saying, I'm doing a podcast. And this was like the dust from the gunpowder from the final gun hadn't even cleared yet. And you're already doing a podcast.
The podcast is called Wicked on Wisconsin. And it's, you know, wherever you find them, Spotify, all that kind of stuff. And when I was getting done with my radio career, putting it on hold, I said, Lee, I think I'm going to do a podcast about being a father. I'm going to call it Check Out My Dad Pod. And she said, that's good. You should do a sports one too. I said, well, I was going to do this dad one. She said, that's fine. What do people know you for? And I said, well, doing sports and stuff, mostly from Milwaukee. Okay, you should do a sports one. And this was back in December. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll do two. That'll work. And I decided to do both. And that, you know, I'll get to the dad one in a second. But the Wisconsin one is, again, goes back to working with you and then working with Chuck and being in Milwaukee for so long. Like, I took all of my Wisconsin fandom with me down to Missouri, and really it blew up because now I don't have to be an objective radio host talking about it and be fair. I could just become a fan and wear ridiculous outfits out to bars and, you know, I can drink 12 beers while watching a Packers game. Couldn't do that most of the time because I had to wake up the next morning.
Sure.
So, like, I could be a fan of those teams, and I took it with me, and I still hold on to it. I still carry the G, Doug, is what I'm trying to say. So I decided that as soon as the game is over, I can't do a call-in show. I can't do a post-game show. I know there's like seven of them on those five radio stations in all over
Everybody's
Wisconsin.
Everybody's got to have one. Everybody.
So I just come in with, you know, the things I've written down during the game, the stuff that I've tweeted out during the game, and I put it into about 20 minutes or so, and then I read people's tweets about it, you know, on the post-game show as well. And then I learned how to do a little bit of video from our old friend Jim Morales, actually. Mo taught me some of the video
nice.
Stuff that I do. So I was doing when the Bucks playoff was going on, I was doing a Wicked on Wisconsin podcast every other night because I would do one right after the Bucks game, you know, shorter 10 minutes or whatever, and then, you know, get that up and on. And then whenever news happens, whether it's a big trade or a game or whatever, I try to do one as well because, I still care about Wisconsin sports. You know, I have more of a connection to them. I have more of an inside knowledge, I think, and I can relate more to Wisconsin sports fans, whether it's Packers, Brewers, Bucks, Badgers, or whatever, more than anything. And I spent, you know, my life in Michigan and down in Kansas City, but I remember my last day on the air, I cried, shocking, but I remember saying that I'm going to be a Packers fan for the rest of my life. And I still believe that to be true. So that's kind of why I decided to do the podcast to make sure I get it done after every Packers game, because that's what people want to hear about. That's what people want to talk about.
How often do you do both that and your dad podcast?
I used to do them both weekly, and that became a lot because chasing around three babies, and I do some freelance news for a small market in Indiana. I don't have all the hours to track down a dad every single week. So I've kind of put the dad one on an every 3 week kind of hiatus.
So what was what's that email or that podcast all about? What is that? Tell me about that, because I think a lot of people understand that you do a sports podcast, but what's the dad podcast about?
It was my original idea because I'm a rare breed. A stay at home dad is not necessarily something that happens all that much. You know, traditionally the family is mom stays home or both parents work. Usually dad's not the one staying home. Well, when my wife got this, we were in Kansas City and my wife was pregnant with twins. She gave birth to three babies in 50 weeks. Any women that are listening to this, if there's a woman listening to this podcast that has had kids, that they know, good God. She got an opportunity. She got a job offer to be the program director at the radio station she started at 20 years ago as an intern in Des Moines. And she took that on the agreement. I said, well, what if I stop working? Can you afford, you know, does the salary afford us a home? The cars we need, because we have a minivan and hers.
Of course.
And I thought, well, I'm going to podcast about my life as a stay-at-home dad staying home with three babies, because my oldest right now is 21 months. The twins are 9 months, and that's a weird story. And that's, to me, what podcasting is about. Like, Doug, you tell stories on this podcast about whatever, you know, the topic is that day, whether it's Wisconsin sports, Wisconsin politics, Wisconsin media, whatever, you know about that. I'm learning as I go about being a dad. And I'm telling that story. And what I like to do every week is have a guest dad of the week on. And what I found after about six or seven of these, the guest dad of the week is the most interesting part of this. And I get a regular dad. You know, I don't have a whole lot of celebrity connection. I can't call up Matthew McConaughey and be like, all right, all right, all right, come on my podcast. I will get my friends on, connections, people get recommended to me. And they tell their story about being a dad and whether they, I mean, I have, you know, the George Floyd protests were going on. I had a couple of friends who are black and they had kids recently, very recently. And I asked them what their ideas were of raising, you know, African-American kids in America in 2020 and beyond, or teachers during the pandemic. You know, my brother-in-law's brother-in-law, got that? He's a teacher here in West Des Moines. And I, what's it like being a parent and being a teacher when at the time nobody had any plan of who was doing virtual, who was doing in-home or, you know, at home, all that stuff, in-classroom learning. So I try to talk to dads about their story and their life. And then also, if I can relate it to an issue going on in the country at that time, or to, if I figure it's an issue that's an important one for dads to hear. Like, I had a dad on, Dave Hero, our friend, Mr. Wrestling in Milwaukee. He went through something that's very, very difficult in Wisconsin, and that's obtaining custody of your kid. And that was one of the most interesting podcasts I had, because in the state of Wisconsin, it's difficult for dads to get custody. And he fought and fought and fought and finally got it and raised his kid to be a wonderful young man. So those are the kinds of things, Doug, that we talk about and check out my dad pod. And it's going pretty well. It recently won two awards at the Wisconsin Podcast Awards show a couple of weeks ago for best family podcast and best new podcast. So I can put that on my refrigerator.
Nice. I didn't know that was a thing. So I guess I'll be gunning for that next
year.
You
may want to contact my friend Allison Phillips.
Okay.
She will get you hooked up with Edge Podcasting and the Wisconsin Podcast Association. I'll get you that off the air.
Okay. Very nice. like I said about 40 minutes ago, I wanted to... this is like one of our shows sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
This is, you know what it reminds me of? And I've told this story 1,000 times about what makes a good radio show and why you can't always just do sports. And I tell the Crocs story. And I know you know what the Crocs story is, but for those who don't know what the Crocs story is, I think it was the first time that SSP had sent you and me to Packers training camp. And it was Monday morning and it was still dark outside. We were at the Midway Hotel, which is right across the street from, I mean, if anybody's ever been up to Green Bay, you know exactly where the Midway Hotel is.
I loved and hated that week. Like, I loved it because it was cool, but I hated it because it was exhausting.
It was very exhausting.
It was an exhausting week, but it was cool to be at Packers training camp. Sorry.
Because and when we got off the air at, they started practice at about 8:30, we got off the air at 9 o'clock. So then we would just take the short walk over to the Reinitschke practice facility and watch the Packers work out. But at 4:55, we started the show at 5 o'clock. At 4:55, you roll in looking like absolute hell. I love you, brother, but
I was probably at the bar the night before. Maybe at the bar we were broadcasting from 7 hours before.
It's possible because you're still wearing your pajamas.
Yeah.
And you were wearing these Michigan Crocs.
And, yeah, I have them.
And I'm sure you do. I'd be disappointed if you didn't. And in the first minute of the show, I'm like, what in the hell are you wearing? And we had a 3-hour discussion about Crocs that lasted in and out for the better part of a week. The whole week that we were up there, and
they're really comfortable.
I'm sure they are. But that's just an example of, you know, sometimes when the show goes off the rails, we got more calls, more emails, more you name it, more feedback from that stupid aside than I think anything else we ever did.
Do you remember when Cliff Saunders admitted he couldn't ride a bike?
Yes.
Like, yes, that's another example. Like, who cares what the Packers did in the draft? Like, Cliff can't ride a bike.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Is I mean, when I was in Kansas City, it was just one of those things. My partner and I were coming back from a break, and we were talking about, like, cooking at food for yourself. And I'm like, well, I got the onion out, and then I took the pasta noodles, and I broke them in half, and I threw them in the pot. And she stopped me. And I said, what? She said, what did you just say? I said, well, I got the onion, then I got the noodles, and I broke them, and I threw them in the pot. You did what to the noodles? And my partner, her last name is Monticelli. Like, she's 100% Italian.
Yeah.
And that was, like, an insult to her and her culture that I would break the spaghetti noodles before putting them in the pot. We did 45 minutes on whether or not, and we must have taken, you know, 30 phone calls about whether or not you're supposed to break pasta noodles before, and I think you do, so you don't have, like, a softball-sized ball of noodle on the end of your fork. But that's just me. Like, that's the fun stuff. And that applies in a news format or a sports format or or whatever. As long as people can relate to it, that's what makes talk radio so much fun.
1,000%. 1,000%.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you did a podcast after the Packers game today. I do want to circle back to that eventually, but the tangent was mine, so I will take full 1,000% ownership of that. What do you think of this team right now? I mean, Aaron Rodgers looked fantastic a week after looking like hot garbage against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but and I know that the Texans, they've got some problems on defense, certainly. They had been getting after the quarterback, but Aaron stayed pretty clean today.
The Packers are, what, 5-1 now, and they have beaten teams with a combined record. Their opponent's record is 10-23. All right. If you're keeping score at home, going into tonight's game, the Seahawks have beaten teams with a combined record of 9-23. So it's not like there's a ton of world beaters at the top of the NFC. If you look at the Packers-Buccaneers game, which is all – look, who cares if they beat the Texans, right? Like, that doesn't matter.
They're supposed to beat the Texans.
And they're supposed to beat Minnesota, you know, 7 days after we record this. But what happens 4 days after that when they play San Francisco? What happened a week ago with Tampa Bay? If you look at Tampa as a one-game vacuum, you're like, ah, it was a clunker. But if you look at the Matt LaFleur era, they get out-physicaled by San Diego, they get out-physicaled by San Francisco twice, and then they get beat up by Tampa Bay. Now, Tampa didn't have to do a lot. The game just really got out of hand really quick with the pick six, then the second interception returned to the two. All of a sudden, everything in that game flipped, and I think the Packers panicked. I think it's so funny, Doug, because you're like, you look at Tampa Bay, and they lost to the Saints, and they won a couple, and then lost to the Bears. And you're like, ah, what a joke. The Bears aren't any good. At some point, we may have to actually start taking the Bears seriously. Tampa put a hurtin' on Oakland, L.A., Vegas, whatever they are now, on the Raiders today. So losing to Tampa isn't the end of the world, I don't feel like. I do want to see what they do against what a team I think can actually win the NFC, and that's San Francisco. I mean, they don't have one of the Bosas anymore because he got hurt. But if the Packers' offensive line and their quarterback can't handle a blitzing pass rush where they get pressure, 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 if they can't do it again, then I really worry about what happens if they see San Francisco or somebody like that in the postseason. You know, like, is this just how the Packers are? Where when they lose by a huge margin. They don't lose by 2 points under Matt LaFleur. They lose by 15 or 20 or 38-10. I think they're fine, I want to say. Cautiously optimistic. I would love to see a receiver added at the deadline or J.J. Watt brought home. Imagine that defensive line, Doug. If you've got Rashawn Gary, Za'Darius Smith, J.J. Watt, and Kenny Clark. I mean, that front coming at you would be nasty. It would give the ball back to Aaron more times than they're used to. So there is definite room for improvement. They're one of the five best teams in the NFC, which is what I thought before the season, and it's how I feel going into week eight.
I spoke with Sean Pendergast, who I worked with in Houston. He does the morning show on the Texans flagship station. And I asked him specifically about J.J. Watt, and there's a feeling down there that his days in Houston might be somewhat numbered, and fans wouldn't blame him because of how mismanaged his whole career has been. He's got a Hall of Fame career, three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year. There's only been one other player that's ever done that, and that's Lawrence Taylor. Houston Texans fans wouldn't blame J.J. if he were to either ask for a trade or be traded, especially if it's to Green Bay. Could you imagine that homecoming?
Oh, man, that would be amazing. I mean, how cool would it be for the kid from he's from Pewaukee, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, kid from Pewaukee, left to go to Central Michigan, came back, great Wisconsin career, to come back home and maybe play 3 to 5 years in Green Bay and end it as a Packer and maybe with a ring or whatever. I would love it. It'd be a great Hollywood story. If I was J.J. Watt, hell, if I'm Deshaun Watson, I want out of Houston. They are brutally ruining Deshaun Watson. I mean, do you realize Deshaun Watson has thrown for 700 yards, 6 touchdowns, no picks, and been 0-2
yeah.
in his last 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Like, Yeah, they've got.
Meanwhile,
rid of
DeAndre
best...
Hopkins leads the NFL in receptions and yards.
Exactly. You got rid of the best wide receiver in football. You brought in a broken running back. You traded away your first and second round picks for Laremy Tunsil. I mean, they're not going anywhere. What they need is draft capital. And maybe if you offer a third and a sixth for J.J. Watt, I don't know if that's enough. I'm never good at assessing how many, you know, what picks get anybody anything. But I think it would be a great move, and fans would love it. Oh, my Lord, would fans love bringing J.J. Watt home.
Instantly the top-selling jersey, probably in the NFL.
I think that's a good guess. I think... there would, I mean, how many J.J. Watt jerseys would you see at training camp next year? Because I don't think you're going to be allowed to go to any games anytime soon.
Probably not.
At Lambeau. But how many J.J. Watt jerseys riding bikes would you see next year on kids and on adults? I think that would be a slam dunk in terms of jersey sales. But
all right.
I don't know if the Packers want to give up that much.
Well, Ted Thompson isn't there anymore. So
that's true.
You never
That's
know.
True.
There could be some rolls of the dice that we otherwise would not have seen in the past. They, you know, Brian Gutekunst actually would go out and spend some money on a free agent, which we all know that Ted was
He signed
not
Julius Peppers. Remember that morning when he saw? I was in Chicago.
I was at shock.
I was getting ready to get hammered at St. Patrick's Day parade, and we walked into the bar, and my phone went off, and I am in a green morph suit, Doug, with shamrocks all over it, getting ready to march in the Chicago parade. And my phone's going off, and all these friends came down from Milwaukee, and everybody's going crazy. We just signed Julius Peppers? Are you kidding me? I'm like, well, it's what's on Twitter, so it must be true. And there's that picture of Peppers at Lambeau Field,
right.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
We did not see that one coming by a long shot.
No. It was like when they traded for K-Rod. At the night of the All-Star break, nobody saw that coming either.
I want to ask you this question because I was actually looking back into when I was doing my show on ESPN, when I had you on right before the Kansas City Chiefs game. And I wanted to get you on then, number one, just to say hello and to talk to you again on the radio because it was fun. But you got to see the first few seasons of Patrick Mahomes. How special is this kid? How good can he be in your best estimation?
More than anything, Doug, they could give that kid the key to the city right now. Kansas City, we were talking about this because we didn't do a ton of sports on my station, but Mahomes was the story. Kansas City, you know, with all the infighting, and we had a governor get recalled in Missouri named Eric Greitens, and the Trump, Clinton, Trump, whatever, everything. The one story the entire area on both sides of the Kansas and Missouri border could actually combine and rally around was Patrick Mahomes, because he came out of the gate as just this freak. I mean, he threw 6 touchdowns in his first start as the starter. He started week 17 one year in his rookie season against Denver, but that didn't really count. Before I was doing a little pre and post on the sports station down there, they had asked me to join their coverage. I made the incredible claim that before the first game, Doug, he was the worst quarterback in the AFC West. And the AFC West at the time included Case Keenum.
Really nailed that one, didn't you, Wick?
Old takes exposed. Hit me up on Instagram a year later.
That's how you know you've made it.
I felt really good. It pops back up every year or so. I think Patrick Mahomes is Aaron Rodgers 2.0.
Wow.
I think that he is such a student of the game and got paired with the perfect head coach in Andy Reid, and they have built that team. He was the missing piece. I mean, they had Alex Smith, who was winning games, but Alex Smith couldn't throw the football 40 yards down the field. You've got Patrick Mahomes, who can throw the ball 80 yards down the field if he needs to. Now, I don't think it has to happen very often, but the no-look passes, Doug, the left-handed throws, all that is just gravy on top. He is unbelievable. And he, to me, he's like Aaron. Aaron can run, but he's not a running quarterback. Patrick Mahomes can run, but he's not a running quarterback. He's pinpoint accurate. He's very, very smart. He makes very few mistakes. And he is a god for winning a championship, winning an MVP, being the Super Bowl MVP. He's a part owner of the Royals down there, Doug. He brought a Whataburger to Kansas City.
Oh,
which
that
I mean,
by itself.
Exactly. Like, that's now the biggest thing he has ever done. this year, while everybody else was having a crappy 2020, he not only won a title, won a Super Bowl MVP, became a part owner of the Royals, brought a Whataburger, he got engaged to his college sweetheart, and they're having a baby girl. I mean, he's had the top 2020 of anybody I know.
Seems like a good kid, too.
He is a really nice guy, and he's on every damn commercial. Nationally, yes, but before that, locally, I mean, he is
Aaron Rodgers 2.0.
He really is. I'm telling you right now. I mean, he's got the skill set of Aaron. He's got the mentality of Aaron. I don't know if he ever wants to be anywhere else. I'm sure 12, 15 years from now, they'll talk about, well, as Patrick Mahomes lost it, we have to move on. But right now, that guy is it. I mean, he is literally it. He is the Aaron Rodgers of Kansas City in popularity and what he means to that town.
Unbelievable. Mike Wickett, who has spent most of the last hour with us here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Final thing before I let you go, tell us where we can find your podcasts.
I am all over. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mike Wickett. There's a Facebook page, facebook.com/Mike Wickett Podcasts. You can get them on Amazon. You can get them on Google, Spotify. You can get them on Apple Podcasts as well. And subscribe, download, appreciate it, tell a friend, all that. And how's your podcast going, Doug? How is this going? Because I know you launched it, and I see a new one pop up like every other day.
I do Wisconsin-centric shows, Wisconsin sports-centric shows on Monday and Friday. And then on Wednesday, it's really anything goes. It's sometimes I did a political interview with one of the hosts on WTMJ a couple of weeks ago. That actually was pretty popular with Steve Scafidi. I've done some of my old interviews that were either meaningful or... when Vin Baker's talking about how he drank away $100 million, I did that interview a couple of weeks ago as well. Could be an entertainment podcast. Really, Wednesdays, it's literally anything goes. And so it's been fun. It's been something that, in this whole COVID world, I've got the studio in my house. I might as well use it, right? So it's been great.
You know, it's amazing. Like, podcasting wasn't even a thing 10 years ago. Like, Facebook wasn't a thing 15 years ago. I remember... I took a train back to Milwaukee, and our boss said, hey, you should probably get on this Facebook thing. And I said, I don't know what that is, but okay. And then a year later, hey, you should get on this Twitter thing. People are using it. You should get on this podcast thing. I wish we had all listened when people said, hey, podcasting is the future, or it'll be part of the future 10, 15 years ago, because then we'd all be Joe Rogan and we'd all be rich. But right. None of us did that, Doug.
Right.
Now we're all jumping into the ocean with the other fish. So I'm glad to see you're doing it, because I know that COVID gotcha at ESPN, not the virus itself, but
sure.
It caused a lot of people to lose gigs. And I saw that news, and I saw our friends at Entercom got chopped all over the country, and iHeart and everybody. Just kind of sucks what COVID is. But, this gives you a chance to still do what you love, and that's cool.
Yeah, it's been fun, and it keeps the skills sharp for when that phone call does come. But I want to keep doing this even after, I would like to continue doing terrestrial radio. I'd still like to do that. But even after that does happen again on whatever format and whatever level that, materializes, I still want to do this. This has been a blast over the last – I've only been doing this a month, but it's been a really fun month so far.
The difference is you're your own boss right now.
Right.
You don't have a program director. Obviously, you'd like to have advertising and make dollars doing it. I got hit by COVID with that, actually, Doug. So I lost out on some advertising for the podcast. So my advice to anybody who wants to do this is stick with it. Know your story. Tell your story, whatever it is, however often you do it. And just be consistent with it, because – stories like the ones that get told on Doug's podcast or mine or whatever, they matter to people. And it's the new way we're listening to stuff. It really is. I will always love terrestrial radio, and one day I'd like to come back out of retirement. But this is kind of a neat way to communicate as well.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Mike, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. Originally, when we were texting back and forth earlier in the week, how long will this be? 15 minutes tops.
Sure, yeah.
Absolute
oh,
tops.
Yeah. I mean, it'll take some serious editing on your end to get this down to 15 minutes.
Well, the other thing about podcasting is, when my wife Erica was asking me, so how long are you going to make each show? And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's as long as it is. The show is as long as the show is.
It's as long as it needs to be. I mean, Doug, I did one on when the Packers drafted Jordan Love. It was 6 minutes. But that was it. It was like, get your boom, get it out there. You know what I mean?
There you go. Just keep publishing, right?
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for having me on, man. I'd appreciate it. Continued success. I had Erica for me.
Absolutely, pal. Will do. That'll do it for today's edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. As always, you're welcome to interact with the show 24/7 at Doug Russell Pod on both Instagram and Twitter. Search for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook. Email us at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. We're back in a couple of days for an Anything Goes Wednesday. We'll see you then.